Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, May 14th. I'm Jackie Orchard, filling in for Ray Graff. Ready to answer a broad range of your cooking questions today is Chef Bill Collins. Chef Bill enjoys helping his clients to create healthier versions of the dishes they love, including gluten-free, lower-fat, and vegetarian. If you have a question about any kind of cooking, give us a call at 1-800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. You can also email your questions to voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 1-800-348-2551. Chef Bill Collins and your cooking questions, all coming up on Vox Pop, right after this news. Hello once again, and welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Jackie Orchard, filling in for Ray Graff. Joining us today to answer all of your cooking questions is Chef Bill Collins. Chef Bill is a graduate of the Cambridge School of Culinary Arts. After graduating, he cooked at the Old Ritz-Carlton in Boston and then worked at Harbor Sweets, the handmade chocolate company in Salem, Massachusetts. He started his personal chef business in 2001 and is the author of not one but four cookbooks: Knife Skills, Making and Using Vinegar, How to Make Chocolate Candy, and Making Caramels. Chef Bill, in addition to being a personal chef, teaches people how to cook. Right now, that's mostly over Zoom, but when there's not a pandemic, he teaches in private homes, parties, and at team-building events for companies. Chef Bill is currently providing free Zoom cooking classes every Wednesday and Friday, but today, for the next hour, he belongs to the good listeners of Vox Pop Food Friday. So give us a call with your cooking questions. The number is 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. You know you can email us, too, at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, we want you to call. That number is 1-800-348-2551. Chef Bill, welcome to Vox Pop. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, Jackie. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great because you sent me a bunch of goodies and I will be eating them for the next hour.
Well, I'm so glad I can keep you well fed. And also, I just want to say thank you for having me on the show today. I'm a huge fan. I love Food Friday, and I'm just so pleased to be joining you.
Oh, well, we're happy to have you. But before we get started, we've got some questions we need to go over because you've got an interesting past leading up to you being a very fancy private chef. And you started your career in IT. So tell me what that was like and why did you make that change?
Well, I like to call it an involuntary decision. I was actually quite successful in IT. I was working, selling huge computer systems to large companies. And then I went to a small consulting company, and I had a good year. I went in one day, I made my quota, got my bonus, and got fired. So I thought, well, this isn't going well. And I had a weird boss, but I was just as happy to go. And then I was trying to figure, well, okay, I'll go to my next IT job. And I woke up one morning, it was just like in a bad movie. I sat bolt upright in bed and I thought, I can't do this anymore. You know, I'm good at it, but I can't get out of bed in the morning. And so that led me, I was talking to a friend, we were swapping recipes. She said, you should go to cooking school. And there's a 1-year program in Cambridge. I did that and I've never looked back. As you said, after I finished school, I cooked at the Old Ritz in Boston for 2 years, and that was what an education. And then after that, did that and went to work for another small restaurant, I decided to open up my personal chef business. And it was the day before, well, I had one client, things were going well, but it was the day before 9/11, and everything fell apart for everybody. And I thought, well, I would just be doing the daytime personal chef thing, and then after a lot of time, the phone rang. Somebody wanted me to do a romantic dinner for two. And I thought, uh-oh, too much like catering. I wouldn't know what to charge. I didn't know what to do. But my mouth said yes, and it went really well. So, and then it dawned on me, there are these other nighttime, not just the personal chefing things. And so from that came, you know, the cooking lesson parties, small dinner parties, romantic dinners for two. Actually, over the years, I've done 4.5 marriage proposals. and over romantic dinners for two. And so that's how this has all evolved to where we are today.
Well, I hope everybody's listening. That does sound romantic. But these Zoom classes that you're teaching, you know, for free during the pandemic, you know, different
yep.
chefs have tried this. They've tried to pivot during the pandemic with varied success. How many participants are you getting at these?
They really vary anywhere for the free ones from about 20 or so. This past week, we had almost 60. I'm sorry, this past Wednesday. So it really does vary depending both on the menu because I'm also partnering with some libraries and some charitable groups to open it up to their organizations. Mm-hmm. So like this past week, we did blintzes for organization Hadassah in with the upcoming holiday of Shavuot, and so that was just a lot of fun. We had about 60 people. I partner once a month with the Newton Free Library in Newton, Massachusetts. So and then other folks, but it's been going well because also my classes are unique. I've never seen anybody doing it quite like this. I've got two cameras, and so one picturing me in my entirety, and the other one focusing either on the cutting board or the stovetop, and I, you know, swing it back and forth so they can be right in on the action. But what also makes it unique is my classes are fully, completely interactive because my wife, Karen, she's also the executive producer. She keeps things running smoothly. So what we do is everybody mutes themselves, but in the chat section, if they have questions, comments, sort of like Food Friday, people say, well, how about this? Why are you doing it that way? Or even if it's not completely related to the topic at hand, it keeps the conversation going. So I'm not sitting there staring at the computer. I'm cooking and talking, which, as you can probably tell, I can cook and talk at the same time quite easily. So I've never seen anybody do it. It's cooking without a net because you don't know what the questions are coming in. And that's the fun for me. So the Zoom classes are going well.
We're joined today by instructor, author, and private chef Bill Collins. He's here today to answer all of your cooking questions, any genre, any topic, doesn't matter. If you have a question for Chef Collins about any kind of cooking, give us a call, 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. You can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number, it's 1-800-348-2551. Now, at these Zoom classes that you're doing, what are some of the most common questions that you're getting from the participants?
Well, one of the things, the way I do my classes, and whether it's a Zoom class or like when I do them in person at Stonewall Kitchen, where I've been doing classes every other month for the last 12 years, except during the pandemic, although I am going back next month, the questions, see, when I teach classes, I don't tell people what to do. I tell them how to do it and why. And because everything is, you kind of interpret, but the recipe kind of becomes your own. And so really, because it's so much technique and I show here's how you do stuff, people often hate to go ooh and ah, but they say, I never thought of that. Like, for instance, and I'm doing it again tonight's class, I'm making pot de creme in today's 5 o'clock Zoom class, which is the baked chocolate custard. And one thing I'm going to do with that is I'm going to put a little whipped cream on top. But the few times that I have done the whipped cream in the class, I just take out a bowl, I put in the whipped cream, and with a whisk, I whisk it right up. Number one, it's fun to show off, but also for people to see that you can do this at home. You don't have to get out the electric beaters and mixer, and you don't have to put your beaters and bowl in the freezer. Just take it out and make it, and in less time than it takes to put all that together and use an electric mixer, you'll have your cream all whipped up. So it's little things like that to help people go, ooh, I can do that. So whether it be for experienced cooks, so there's always a tip or even just a toss-away line where I'm saying, here's how you do it, and people go, I never thought about that, to new cooks. I've had people come up to me, actually before the pandemic, but come up to me and talk to me in the Zooms and afterwards when we open it up for people to chat even more. And people have said, my friends think I can cook. My family thinks I'm a competent cook now because giving them the tools to become a little bit or a whole lot better. So that's kind of the long-winded answer to that question. What do people, some of the comments about stuff. It's like, I didn't know it's that easier. I didn't know you could do that. So that's where that comes from.
Instructor, author, and private chef Bill Collins joins us today to answer all of your cooking questions. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. And I think we're going to take a quick break here, Chef Bill. But when we come back, we've got more questions for you. We'll take some calls. We'll munch on some crackers and biscotti that I've got in the studio. All of that is coming up right after this break.
Support for WMZ comes from Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world. SpiritHAUS.com. Troy Waterfront Farmers Market, every Saturday from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. in Riverfront Park. Masks and social distancing required. TroyMarket.org. River Valley Co-op, Northampton, Massachusetts, a food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar, and a bakery. rivervalley.coop. Big Y, a local family-owned and operated market serving communities in Massachusetts and Connecticut for 85 years with local produce and products, meat and seafood. BigY.com. And Taste New York at Todd Hill, a market offering New York-made food and beverages 10 miles north of Route 84 on the Taconic State Parkway. Taste New York Todd Hill on Facebook.
Please don't ask me what music this is. Ray Graff picks the music, so I'm sure he'll know if you want to know. Welcome back to Vox Pop Food Friday. I'm Jackie Orchard. Instructor, author, and private chef Bill Collins joins us today to answer all of your cooking questions. If you have a question about any kind of cooking, any genre of food, give us a call at 1-800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. You can also email your questions to voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number, it's 1-800-348-2551. Now, Chef Bill, you mentioned that clients often ask you, you know, what's a healthier version of this dish that I can make? Or I love this dish, but can you give me a way to make it a little bit healthier? Can I substitute something? Give me some examples of some common dishes where it's easy to make substitutions. All right, and it looks like we lost our guest. It's always fun on Vox Pop when we have some technical difficulties. So while we're waiting for Chef Bill Collins to come back and while we watch Zach the Engineer scramble a little bit, always fun on a Friday. Well, hello once again, and welcome back to Vox Pop Food Friday once again. We're trying to keep everybody on their toes, and I'd say we're doing a great job at that. How are you, Bill Collins?
I'm doing well. I don't know what happened, but my heart has just been restarted, so...
You and me both. You know what? I think wherever Ray Graff is today, if he knew this was happening, he would be... thrilled. It would be sweet revenge because it always happens to him and not me. So I guess this is my comeuppance. I'm sure he'll be happy.
Well, I'm so glad that we're back on the air.
Yeah. You know, because that's where shows are supposed to be. They're supposed to be on the air.
Yeah.
So as we were talking about some dishes that your clients have asked you for some substitutions for, maybe
yes.
Make them a little healthier. Talk to me about mm-hmm. some of those.
Well, I'll give you some examples in a moment. My general approach is that whatever the dietary need might be, whether it be gluten-free or FODMAP, which is, you know, often removing onions and garlic or things like that from the menu, or low-fat or sodium or whatever, that you can always substitute something, and not to say that it's going to be an identical one-to-one, because it doesn't work out that way. But if you can keep the flavor oomphed up, then you're still going to have a great dish. I mean, take something like, meatloaf. you know, everybody loves meatloaf, and I would say about 103% of the world just about puts ketchup in their meatloaf because that's what everybody's had when they were growing up. But if you're trying to cut out so much sugars and things like that, I often go with a mild salsa because it gives you the liquid, gives you so it keeps it moist. It kind of gives you a different flavor profile, but not a hot sauce, because so you're really filling it out nicely. And then maybe put a few other things in there. So you're not going to say, gee, I missed the ketchup. You're going to say, this is a great meatloaf. Another thing is pad thai or some other Asian dishes, because they so often call for fish sauce, but there are vegetarians all over the place who love to eat. And so what do you do to replace that? So there are a couple of things. There are vegetarian fish sauce recipes, but some of them have some, you know, the odd chemical additive. Or you can get something, two things, umami puree with togarashi peppers, combining that with Bragg's liquid aminos. And so you get a nice little oomphiness to it. So, because if you look at some recipes, they say, well, just put in soy sauce. Well, that's a completely different item, and you're not going to get that little oomphiness that you would get from the fish sauce. So there are all kinds of substitutions. One other thing. A number of gluten-free clients. I have a gluten sensitivity as well. So mac and cheese, I mean, that's just one of the great comfort foods of all time. And I found that there are certain gluten-free pastas that are good, but there's so much other things going on in the mac and cheese. Nobody has ever said, boy, this tastes like a gluten-free pasta. Everybody says, what a great mac and cheese. I've served it at large parties, you know, for clients who are gluten-free, and people love that kind of thing. So whatever the food or the menu might be, there's always a substitution you can make to keep the flavor good.
Instructor, author, and private chef Bill Collins is joining us today. He's ready to answer all of your cooking questions. But to ask a question, you have to call us, 1-800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But one more time, that number is 1-800-348-2551. Now, Chef Collins, we have an email here from Glenn. He says... Mm-hmm. Having never learned to cook for my entire life, preach, Glenn, I'm right there with you. I have finally begun for the last year teaching myself to cook dinner. We're trying to be healthy instead of always getting takeout. Again, Glenn, we're like the same person. What do you recommend I focus on in order to build myself a strong foundation of skills? And that's from Glenn in Vermont.
Well, one of the most popular classes I ever taught, and it's really come back to me many years ago, I did a cooking lesson party for a mother's group north of Boston. And there were about 30 women in the very large kitchen. And the funny thing about it, in my mind, I broke the group up into three categories. One of them is the group who were just hanging on to my every word, other ones who were sort of paying attention, and the other ones who were, it was their night out, and they were in a corner with a glass of wine having a great time. And I was thrilled with that because it's their night. And so they said to me they want something that they could make that's simple with one or more children hanging off of them while they're trying to get dinner on the table.
Yeah.
And to me, that was chicken breast. But the thing is, what I showed them was three variations on chicken breast that you could probably make with whatever you might have in the kitchen. One of them, but they all started the same way, pan searing the chicken breast, just browning it, take it out of the pan, and then build up a sauce. Meaning it could be tomatoes and mushrooms. It could be lemon, like a piccata. It could be something like a marsala. Now, not everybody has marsala around, but you might have some sherry or some port, not a really nice one, but something of the lower variety that you would cook with. And so you can really start with that as a foundation, you know, going with the chicken and go in so many different categories. You could slice up the chicken and you saute some onions. If you have some coconut milk there, a little curry powder, you've got curry chicken. So there are just so many things. I find chicken to be one of the most versatile things in the world. The flip side of that is what if you're a vegetarian? And there's so many things. I've been, because actually this is from my Zoom participants, I've got such actually great, wonderful, a number of just regulars who are just so engaged in the class. And when I started this, I was pretty good with tofu. And the more we talk about it, and I, because I also have different both plant-based as well as meat and dessert recipes in the Zoom classes, I've really upped my tofu game. And I did, a couple weeks ago, I did banh mi sandwiches, which is the Vietnamese street food, the classic sandwich. Usually it's a marinated pork, but I do with chicken and with tofu. And because of all this input, I really upped my game on marinating and searing tofu. And so if you're a vegetarian, there's so many things you can do with that to really oomph up the flavor of it, marinating it. So if you want to go Asian, if you want to go more middle of the road, I can't think of an Italian tofu dish, but only because I haven't tried one yet. There are so many variations of different things you can do, you know, for Glenn to just start with one thing and go from there. I always go back to Julia Child's brilliant book, Mastering the Art of French Cooking, her first book. And to me, the introduction reads like a novel. And she said, if you can master a few recipes and you'll get the techniques, you can go anywhere from there. And that's really what I tell people is get good with a recipe or a type of food that you like. Be comfortable with it. And then once you have that confidence, you can go in any direction, build on that.
Did you see that movie called Julia and Julia about Julia Child?
I did. That was a fun movie. I would watch Meryl Streep play Julia Child anytime.
Oh, of course. Of course. Instructor, author, and private chef Bill Collins is with us today. He's ready to answer your cooking questions. We do have some calls coming in. They're piling up. We'll do one more email, and then we'll get to some of those calls, I promise.
Excellent. No, that's great.
If you have a question for Chef Bill, you can give us a call at 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. Chef Bill, this next question is about one of my favorite things in life, chocolate. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is from Mandy. She says, I have an awful time trying to melt chocolate, both milk and white. I've tried double boilers and the microwave, but it usually winds up in a big solid blob. Help.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks from Mandy.
A couple of things you might. I don't melt chocolate in a microwave. I'm too impatient. You know, to set it for 10 seconds, turn around, and come back 10 seconds later, and hope for the best. But that technique does work. Just be patient with it and stir it around. But if you do it stovetop, do a double boiler. And actually, I'm going to be melting chocolate in my class tonight for the pot de creme. And so a double boiler, you don't necessarily want or need screaming, steaming, roiling, boiling water underneath. You want it to be maybe a simmer, a little less than that. Because one thing that might be happening with your chocolate, and I don't know, is if you're doing the double boiler and there's a lot and there's a high level of water, and you know, keep the water level low. If it's really high, a lot of steam and water droplets might come out. And the biggest enemy of melting chocolate is water and droplets. And even a little bit can cause it to seize up. So calm the temperature down in the water, bring it down a bit, and it might take a little bit longer, but it will melt. And so if you're tempering chocolate, you'll bring it up to the temperature of about 115 or so, and then as you melt it, put in seed chocolate, unmelted chocolate, to really get that nice temper going, which makes it shiny and snappy, but it will not seize up if you don't have too high of a temperature. Because once it gets above around 120 degrees or so, that's when you get into these seizing problems. And you can use those chocolate bits for cookies or something, but it's not going to be a nice looking chocolate that you can make truffles or something else out of.
Chef Bill Collins joins us today. The number to call with your cooking questions is 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. Chef Bill, I noticed, I mean, you've got a couple books that you've written here, and one of them that surprised me was called Making and Using Vinegar, which I just don't see a lot of cooking books about that. Tell me a little bit about the vinegar book.
Well, it's funny because my first book was Knife Skills, and the company, Story Publishing, lovely, great folks. They're actually out of North Adams, and they said, for your next book, we'd like to do vinegars. And honestly, I said to them, really? And so I did it, and I learned so much and got so much out of it, and it's really changed the way I cook and look at foods a lot, because most people figure most people have one or two vinegars maybe in their cabinets. It might be a white vinegar or an apple cider vinegar or certainly a balsamic vinegar, and after that they either have nothing more or they have a zillion vinegars for every little recipe they might have made and then used it once. But in the book, I not only show about how to make vinegar, but even if you don't want to do that, there's so many things you can do to oomph up flavors. Because, you know, when you asked me earlier about how to, you know, substitute some flavorings, I often go with vinegar. If I'm taking something out, for instance, like onions and garlic, I often put in more splashes of vinegar to give it a little zip. I'm not drowning it in vinegar, but just a little bit. I might go with a sherry vinegar. I don't always even go with the balsamic because that can always be a little bit sweet and a little bit denser. But there's so many different vinegars you can use to oomph up the flavors of so many different foods, as well as so many different things you can cook with. One of the things, when I finished the manuscript, they said to me, how about a vinegar drink? And I said to them, oh, come on. And then I did a little homework. And going back to colonial days, there were drinks called shrubs. I'd never heard of them. And I always consider shrubs to be the original Coca-Cola syrup, in that it used to be if you go to a soda fountain and they put in the syrup of whatever the flavor is and fill it with soda water, and then you have your Coca-Cola or whatever. Well, the shrub had vinegar and sugar and fresh fruit in there, and it would sit there, and then you would add it to, it could be sparkling water, it could be wine or whatever, but it was the foundation of all kinds of drinks. And so vinegar, you know, it's been around for literally 9,000 years, and it's used in so many things, and just to oomph up flavors, and I keep using the word oomph, but it really does oomph up the flavor and give you a nice little something to it to finish off whatever you're making.
Hey, I think oomph is a very descriptive word. I have no problem with that. So I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm sure people at home are going to roll their eyes. Like, come on, Jackie, how do you not know this? But how do you make vinegar?
Actually, you just take some old vinegar. There are two ways to do it. And no, nobody would roll their eyes because, you know, one of my cooking mottos is if nobody tells you, how are you going to know? And so what you do is you either take some vinegar and you set it off to the side and hope. I'm sorry, wine rather. It could be wine. It could be apple cider. And what happens is it ferments. And it either ferments on their own or there's something called mother. And you can buy it in beer and wine supply shops. Or if you've bought an organic vinegar, for instance, Bragg's apple cider vinegar, and there's a little cloudy thing is floating or sinking, sunk to the bottom, that's the vinegar mother. That's what grows and speeds up the growth and the fermentation process of the wine turning it into vinegar. And so it could take, you know, a number of weeks, a few months until it, you know, becomes that vinegar, as opposed to something sitting around and just rotting. And so the vinegar starts that way. So a lot of restaurants, they take the old wine at the end of the night, bottles that might be a little left over, and they pour it into these big urns and that already has vinegar in there or vinegar mother. And over a period of time, that's all the vinegar they use in the restaurant. So that's kind of the quick way of saying it's old wine that sat around and gone bad. But it's a little bit more sciencey than that. But that's where vinegar comes from.
You know, I get up in the morning and I get dressed and I just never know what I'm going to learn at work that day. And today, it's vinegar.
I do want to say one more thing. You know, balsamic vinegar, you always see on the label, it says Modena or balsamic of Modena, Italy. And 99.99% of all the balsamic vinegar in the world comes from Modena. Some people do a few little custom ones with it. But they take vinegar and then they put it in a cask. With some more grape solids, and that's how it gets a little bit sweeter and ages nicely. And balsamic, it can be the $1.99 jar that you find in the supermarket, or you can spend hundreds of dollars on a small bottle of balsamic vinegar. And you know, you dip fruit in it, and it's unlike any vinegar you've had, but it's very syrupy and it's just great. So vinegar really does run the whole range of something to make your face all get scrunched up when you taste it, to and you make pickles with it, to something as elegant as an aged balsamic vinegar.
Instructor, author, and private chef Bill Collins is joining us today. He's answering all of my weird random questions as well as your cooking questions. If you have a question, you can call 1-800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. We're just going to do one more email before we take a quick break, and then Chris and Matt, who have been waiting very patiently on the line, I promise we're going to get to you. Really quick email. This is from Doreen. She says, loving the the show. Thanks for doing it. My simple question for this incredible chef is, what is your favorite way to hard-boil eggs? And that's from Doreen.
Well, see, number one, that's the best trick question in the history of the world because, and I don't mean it like you're trying to trick me, but everybody has a hard-boiled egg technique. Because actually there's a two-part answer. What I do is I do very simply. I put it in a pot of cold water, cover the eggs, and I don't put a cover on them, bring it to a boil. And once it's boiled, put a lid on, let it sit for 10 minutes, then run it under cold water, and you've got your hard-boiled eggs. That's one answer. The second part of that answer is, and this is the part that stumps everybody, is how do you peel hard-boiled eggs? And because sometimes you go to peel them afterwards, and it just shreds the egg into pieces. Sometimes it comes off perfectly. Sometimes you have two eggs in the same pot. One is perfect. The other one just puts up a fight. And the truth is, I don't have a straight answer for that because there are New York Times articles about it. Everybody has a theory on that. My personal theory is as soon as the eggs are cool enough to handle, peel them. If they sit around, even if when I said I put them in after they come out and I empty out the pot and I put in ice water, I let them get cold as quickly as possible. So what I do is I peel them as soon as they're cool enough to handle. I peel them, and I have generally the most success that way. Every now and then, I'll get a rotten egg. I'll get an egg that doesn't work out that well, but that's my technique. That's why I said, you know, it was a funny question. Everybody has a theory. One other thing, for a period of time, I was using an induction stovetop. I love induction, and I was doing the eggs the same way. I'd bring them to a boil go to peel the eggs, cool them and peel them. But what I found was that wasn't working. My eggs were undercooked, and I couldn't figure out why. But because induction is so quick, the eggs didn't have enough time to come through the cooking process once the water came to a boil. So I would just turn it much down and have them come to a boil sooner. So you need that time for them to heat up properly. But my technique, I've never had a problem of undercooked eggs with the bring it to a boil uncovered. Cover it, let it sit for 10 minutes, and then put them in ice water till they're cool enough to peel.
Excellent. Instructor, author, and private chef Bill Collins. Thank you. I've been sitting on that one for a bit.
That's a good one.
Thanks. Private chef Bill Collins joins us today. He's ready to answer your cooking questions. If you've got a question, give us a call. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get to these callers. I'm going to eat this biscotti. It's going to be a great time. Join us after the break. Welcome back to Vox Pop Food Friday. I'm Jackie Orchard, filling in for the legendary Ray Graff today. Instructor, author, and private chef Bill Collins joins us today to answer your cooking questions. If you have a question for Chef Bill about any kind of cooking, even your rotten eggs, give us a call at 1-800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. And these lines are really loading up now, so this must be the popular part of the show. But again, that number is 1-800-348-2551. Chef Bill, how do you feel about taking some of these calls?
I would love to.
All right, great. So Chris has been very patient. We'll go to Chris in Housatonic. Chris, you're on.
Yeah, I have a question about the chef.
Great.
Can you make papaya pancakes and green tea pancakes?
I'm going to give you my short answer is I don't know, but I don't know why not, because I have not made them, but there's so many I'm thinking this through out loud, and that's actually how I do a lot of my classes when I get a question of something I haven't done before. So with the papaya, absolutely. Any kind of fruit is great in a pancake. I would mince it up small because just like if you're putting blueberries on a pancake, obviously not huge blueberries, but if you have a big hunk of something, like a huge piece of papaya, it's going to be cold or room temperature. If you cut them up into small pieces, they'll get warmed through in the pancakes. As for green tea, what I think I would do is I would make up a pot of green tea, make it as strong as possible. See, it's not super flavorful in that regard. So I would brew it for, let it sit for, I would say probably, actually you can leave the bag in for ages, doesn't go bad or doesn't over steep. And I would put in splashes of that because you don't want to make the regular pancake amount and then add in more liquid. So I would combine that with the milk or if you're doing a plant-based milk, I would mix that in and then see how the flavor is going. You might need to adjust the amount back and forth if you're not getting a strong flavor through of the tea or whatever other tea you might want to put in there. That's what I would do. I would just kind of keep experimenting with that to see how it goes. And, a green tea and papaya pancake, if you combine them, I think you might get an interesting flavor.
Chris, does that answer your question?
How about black teas?
Pardon?
How about a black tea pancake? How about a black tea pancake?
You know, if you were, I was thinking something like Twinings has a great tea called Lady Grey. It's like an Earl Grey, but they put citrus in it. And I think I would give it a try. I haven't made a tea pancake, but I think it's an interesting combination.
Chris, thank you very much for the call. That was a great question. Instructor, author, and private chef Bill Collins joins us today. He's answering your cooking questions at 1-800-348-2551. And I think we'll go now to Matt and Troy, who's been very patient. Matt, you're on.
Oh, hey, Bill, Jackie, thanks for having me. I had one thing to say about vinegar, because you got me thinking. So a really fruity vinegar can be good with just a splash and with some Prosecco.
I'm sorry, what kind of vinegar did you say? I lost your thought there.
Like a nice fruity vinegar?
Fruity, absolutely. Because that's the great thing about vinegar, just a little splash can just change the whole flavor profile in a really cool way. I mean, whether it be a white balsamic or a fruity vinegar, even something like, you talk about Prosecco, a champagne vinegar, kind of in the same family, just to give it a little pop. I think it's a great idea. It used to be, you've seen people put, believe it or not, a cube of sugar in with some champagne. Well, I think this gives, I think your idea kind of gives it a better, a zippier flavor than a little cube of sugar. So that's a great idea. I like
Without all the sugar. Yeah,
yeah, so exactly.
I mean, great segue into my next question. I'm taking a step back on the health, though. so I've seen, everybody knows you salt water for pasta. But I saw a recipe where I salted water not only, but I also added sugar to water to cook some shrimp. And the shrimp was, like, sweet. Can you just do that with anything? Have I been missing this opportunity?
Well, on the one hand, yes, although I'm about to go – see, that this happens in my Zooms a lot. I'm about to take you off into another direction. But if you wanted to sweeten up the shrimp, I don't see why not. Shrimp cooks rather quickly, so if you're putting in a little less simmering water to cook it up, that would sweeten it up. But one thing to naturally sweeten the shrimp – and this costs a bit more money, is to use wild-caught American shrimp. And as opposed to most of the shrimp we get in the supermarkets, and it's cheaper, is from Asia. But the wild-caught shrimp, remember from Forrest Gump, the Bubba Gump Shrimp Company, where wild shrimp is caught from 9 states, from Georgia down to the tip of Florida, back around to Texas, all through the Gulf Coast. It is the most amazing-tasting shrimp. Once you have that, you can't believe the other stuff even looked like or tasted like shrimp. So, but it's also a natural sweetness and more flavor to it. So I didn't mean to take you sideways there on the shrimp, but that always pops into my mind.
It's no, that's great. I think I'll have to.
And it
yeah, I was going to ask, where would you buy it?
A lot of supermarkets carry it. Wegmans, Whole Foods. Sometimes I'm in Western Mass. Sometimes Big Y. Sometimes Stop and Shop. You can ask them because they often know in advance when it's coming in. But to say Wegmans and Whole Foods almost always have it. And often there's a sale on them as well. A lot of local seafood markets will have it. Just ask them behind the counter, and they might even order it for you. I've seen it on sale anywhere from $10 to $12 a pound, and it can go up to $20 a pound. So it can be on the pricier side when it's not on sale, but it's a mind-bogglingly great shrimp. And also different colors because there are different varieties starting up in Georgia. So there's some pink shrimp, some blue shrimp, some browner shrimp. It's amazing.
All right, Matt, any follow-up questions?
I did just want to say one thing about vinegar. I won't take up any more time. If she's listening, I brined some squash the other night with a bit too much vinegar, and I'm very sorry. But big vinegar fan here. Thanks for everything, Bill and Jackie. Have a great one.
All right, thanks, Matt.
Thank you. You too.
Oh, boy. All right. We've got a lot of other callers. Are we still on a roll, Bill? What do you say?
We are. We are.
All right. Let's go next to, I think, Lisa, also in Troy. Lisa, you're on.
Hi. I have a question about vinegars. I don't really know how to cook with vinegar. I've seen lots of different flavors in the shops. So basically my question is, how do you have some good suggestions with what how you cook with vinegar? I am a vegetarian. And I do want to say that you did spark my interest, though, in the vinegars and drinks. I'm wondering if you could actually soak jalapenos in or a hot pepper in vinegar and then make margaritas out of that. But that's another separate question. I'm definitely going to have to look into your book because I'm really intrigued with all this cooking with vinegar.
I tell you, between a margarita, jalapenos, and vinegar, the top of my head blew off with the incredible flavors that you have. That is one heck of a margarita. So very clever idea. What I suggest to people, there's some dishes that I make which have vinegar that go in early. For instance, I know this wouldn't apply to you being a vegetarian, but I do, for instance, beef short ribs. I often put vinegar, balsamic vinegar in early, and that just kind of helps because it's a long cooking thing. But for so many other things, I suggest just splashing in a little bit of vinegar. I'm not saying a quarter of a cup. I'm saying just literally a splash. See how the flavor tastes, because another one of the rules of cooking is taste it before you serve it. And so if you have a sauce going on, it could be Asian, it could be anything. For instance, if you're making an Asian stir fry, I often splash in just a little rice vinegar. I'll make up my sauce and it's all ready to go. Just literally a splash. I'm not even saying a tablespoon. Splash them in. And so taste it first and see how it adjusts that way. And so it's just going to, there's the word again. It's going to oomph it up. It's going to give a little more pop to it because vinegar, you know, it's got flavor, but it's also very acidic. So it's going to have a little wow in your mouth. So and then to take this just one direction sideways again, that's one of the reasons I talk about this a lot in my Zoom classes is I'm crazy for using zest, orange zest, lemon zest, lime zest, and just the zest because there's so much flavor in there. But I don't use the juice as much. I rarely use lemon juice because of the acid in it because it gives you a different kind of pop. And if you want just more of the subtle, nice flavor of this of that citrus, I go with the zest. So similarly, if I am doing that, I might give it a squirt of lemon. I might give it a little pop of vinegar, and that oomphs up your flavor. Do that. So try splashing and see what happens. And boy, you've got me on that margarita. What a great, great eye-popping margarita.
Who knew that vinegar would just be the key word today? Who knew?
I know. Boy, that's the phrase that pays. That's amazing.
Thanks for the call, Lisa. That's a great question. We've got about 5 minutes left in the show, so we're going to try to get through as many of these as we can. We'll go now to Maria in Dalton. Maria, you're on.
Hi there. Was just wondering what you recommend. I was wondering if you have any breakfast recommendations.
In terms of a big breakfast or something quick and on the go, or using vinegar
like
in breakfast,
like a weekend breakfast.
Boy, you know something? During the week, I've been eating. It's funny, all year round, I've been eating a lot more oatmeal and rice cereal for breakfast. But when I'm doing a big breakfast, I'm an eggs and pancake, turkey bacon kind of guy. And what I always recommend to people is, while you often think of the huge, big brunches that you go out for and you've got like 50 different items to choose from, if you want to do a big oomphy breakfast, weekend breakfast, I would keep it simple. Don't try and do too many things because the thing about breakfast, especially with eggs involved, is it goes quickly. Sure, the turkey bacon might take a while or regular bacon if you're going to do that or a sausage. And if you do that, either keep it warm on the stovetop or keep it in your oven. Heat your oven to 180 degrees, and that way you can keep foods warm in there. because eggs are going to take you 2-3 minutes. And so you don't want to be scrambling at the end. You get the toast, you got the eggs, you might have some leftover potatoes that you've roasted up. I mean, that's how I often do our breakfast. And when I do brunches for clients back when, you know, there's not a pandemic, I do oomph it up, whether it be an omelet station or maybe one of a potato a casserole kind of dish, but keep it simple with a meat, an egg option, and toast, and maybe a potato, and boom, you're full, and that's a big spread.
All right, we've got 3 minutes left exactly, so we're going to go to Jude and New Paltz, but you're both going to promise me that you're going to be really fast, okay?
I'll talk quickly too.
All right, Jude, you're on.
Hello. First time caller, long time listener.
Hi.
I have a quick question. What is any tips on grilling pizza on charcoal?
Oh.
Yes, I definitely use a pizza stone. Don't try. A lot of places say, "Oh, you put it right in the grate." Get a pizza stone. You're going to use more charcoal because I have a charcoal grill. Only reason is you're not going to have problems sticking to the grate. You can control the fire more. And a pizza stone, you always want to preheat your stone for an hour just to make sure it's screaming hot. And so once the dough hits and it starts to cook, it starts to bake immediately because it's on that really screaming hot stone, you can build your pizza up from there. What I also recommend you might want to put the dough on the stone, give it a few minutes to really cook through, and then put your toppings on. So if you don't do that, that's fine. But that might help things because if the cover's coming on and off, you're not going to have the same screaming heat inside as you would if you were doing it in your oven.
Okay, we have 2 minutes left. You're doing great. We're going to go to Mark, and it's going to be really fast. Mark, you're
lightning
on.
Lightning round.
Really quick.
Hi, this is Mark from Amherst. Bill, Jackie, thanks for taking my call. I have a question about risotto rice.
Yes.
Or using rice. I wondered if you had any great tips for that. I've been playing around with it and really like it, especially with shrimp.
Okay.
Yep. So your question is about making risotto with arborio rice?
Yeah, any special tips on that?
Yes, you don't have to make yourself crazy by stirring it for the whole 20-25 plus minutes. What I do is I set a timer on my stove. You start out, if you're sauteing onions or whatever for a base, do that, get them softened up. Put in your rice, arborio rice. You want the short grain rice. I'm talking quickly, Jackie.
You're doing good.
then might want to throw in some wine. Once it reduces, starts to absorb, you put in, make sure your liquid is hot. The stock you're putting in, vegetable stock, chicken stock, whatever, or water, whatever you're using, make sure it's bring it to a simmer first. And so when you're putting it in, that way it doesn't have to heat up as it keeps absorbing. I set a timer literally every minute to a minute and a half. It's going to be longer as the cooking goes on. I add a ladle. I give it a stir, and if needed, add a ladle of liquid. You don't have to stand and stir the whole time. Don't leave the kitchen. Don't start texting. And just pay attention, but you don't have to give it constant attention. Just give it attention, and you'll have a lovely risotto when you're done.
Oh, Bill, you did it. You nailed it. You got it in time. We're just about out of time, folks. My apologies to the people left on the line. Thank you so much, Chef Bill Collins. You've been such a trooper through the technical difficulties.
Thank you.
If you want to look up Chef Bill Collins' cooking classes, he can be found online at chefbill.com or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Chef Bill Collins. Support for Vox Pop's Food Friday comes from Del Mar Farmers Market, featuring local and organic farm products, baked goods, and fair trade crafts. Every Saturday from 9 to 1 at 332 Kenwood Avenue, delmarmarket.org. Stonebridge Orchard, Ulster County, a 200-year-old working farm, open for the season with a farm stand and farm bar and wood-fired pizza, stoneridge.com, and Cafe Capriccio, Albany, New York. The Rua family serving Albany since 1982. Now offering catering options with their Cafe Capriccio to-go menu, cafecapriccio.com for information. Thank you to our engineer, the patient, Zach Malloy. Barb King took your calls today. Thanks, Barb. Today, I'm producer and host, Jackie Orchard. Ray Graff, don't worry, he will return next week for Medical Monday. It's Dentistry with Dr. Yaman Khanna. Stay tuned now for the best of our knowledge, and have a great weekend.